that's what led me down the evidence-based route and looking into different movement theories. And you basically learn that 99% of what people have been told gets them better at basketball is all based off of movement theory that's outdated. That's basically been disproven.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison. As always, here with my co-host, Neruda Perdomo. And we got a banger episode for you guys today. But first, we got to start with some sad news and take a moment to reflect on the passing of Fred Garland, a member of Trine Basketball, won the national championship with them last year. He's having a really good year this year. And, you know, it really just put things in perspective for me. And I imagine for you, too, just like he's a student athlete currently. And, you know, that can happen to anybody at any moment. Like it was a car accident. So, I mean, prayers go out to the Trine community. I feel for all those guys, you know, when you're a part of a team and you lose anybody to like transfer portal injury, anything like that hurts a lot. But I can't imagine like the passing of a teammate or family member. And big shout out to his older brother, Cortez, who was a part of the staff and, you know, has to deal with that. So our support and our prayers are definitely with the Trine community. I don't know if you have any extended thoughts about that, but just wanted to give a little moment to reflect on that.
Yeah, definitely. Just rest in peace, man. It's just this awful situation. You know, I'm feeling for the Trine community. You know what I mean? That, you know, losses are never easy. And obviously you never really expect those days to come. But obviously this one was probably really unexpected. So it's really painful for that community right now. And I can only really imagine what they're going through. So definitely praying for them. Yeah.
And it's especially like during the holidays, like make sure you tell your loved ones all the time, like I'm thinking of you or I love you, just, you know, cause like you said, it can happen to anybody at any time. And, you know, just cherish every moment you have with everybody, regardless of, you know, what they mean to you. Just don't take life for granted, basically. But let's go through our little Alfred and Utica check-in. I want to hear about, you know, it was finals week and now you're home. So just talk about, you know, life for Neruda right now.
Yeah, everything's been pretty smooth. Finished finals week strong. Still waiting on those final grades. I think right now we are 6-3 heading into break, which obviously we want to be better just as a team. But, you know, we have this little bit of a long break and just, you know, like Coach Coffey said, a chance to look ourselves in the mirror. What do we need to get better at as a group, individually? Make sure we're staying in the gym, you know, staying in the weight room, you know, staying locked in until we have our next game, which is Brockport in January. So, I mean, everything's been pretty smooth over here, bro. I can't really complain other than, you know, just the competitor in me wants to, you know, we lost to Hobart, which is a good team, well-coached before break. And, you know, the competitor in me wants to play a game tomorrow because, you know, I want to get that win right back. But, you know, we're going to wait, watch the film, and we're going to get back for sure.
Nah, yeah. I mean, last year I dealt with that too. Like, when you lose the game right before break, like, all you can think about the whole break, or, you know, when you're in the gym, all you could think about is this opportunity, that opportunity. So I definitely know what you mean with that. Talking a little bit about Alfred basketball, we picked up a dub right before break. We're now 3-5. We beat Buff State. It was a crazy game, bro. It was down 15 at halftime. And what I really like about this team, and, you know, I haven't had this experience, when we're down big, like, nobody panics. Everybody's still, like, we're fine. We went into the locker room, like, there's a few adjustments we need to make. And then coach's halftime speech really, like, lit a fire in everyone. He was like, you guys look soft. You guys can't score one-on-one on people. And you can't stop anyone. So you're basically going to lose games if you can't fix that. And, you know, we came out in the second half. Buff State scores 5 field goals in the whole second half. So we were locked in, and it felt really good to, you know, get a win going into break. But it was also crazy, like, finals week, because you got like, from a student athlete's perspective, you got finals throughout the whole week. We're 2-5. I wasn't having the best, like, past few games. So I was just struggling balancing school and hoop. And then it felt good to, you know, kind of have a pretty good game against Buff State. I finished the semester with a 4-0. So, I'm lit right now, and you know, it's back to the drawing board. I just left the gym, so yeah, there's a lot to improve on. But I mean, we got a big episode with your boy Mitchell Kirsch. Mitchell Kirsch, definitely one of the like most respected trainers in my opinion. You know, just based off what he's done in the game already, but you know, he's evolving and he knows he has to continue to evolve. So there's a lot we talked about with Mitch, but this is your boy. So I want you to take the floor on what you thought about, you know, or your relationship and then what you thought about this episode.
Yeah. So, you know, with Mitch, he's obviously been like one of my probably like closest friends. You know what I mean? Like I had to think back when he was talking about the years when we started training. But so with me, like I kind of started basketball late. Like I started playing when I was like, I'll say like 10, like seriously playing like 10 years old, like really getting in the gym and like learning how to play basketball. Like I'd always go to like living in New York City, always go to like parks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Whatever. But like for real, started playing when I was 10. And you know, as I got older, you know, obviously my dad works at Phillips Exeter, which is a boarding school in New Hampshire. I used to go to like the high school like practices here because Coach Jay Tilton, he runs like a great program here. They've had a lot of, you know, success. They've won, you know, NEPSAC Class A titles. Duncan Robinson has come here. I'm pretty sure he was here the year before I got here, just, you know, on campus as a high school student. But I want to say when I was like 12 or 13, it was Mitchell's first year at Phillips Exeter. And this is like the time when I was really starting to like find my love for basketball. And I would sit in on their practices, bro. And I would see Mitch, you know, practicing whatever. And as I got older, you know, Mitch would see me in the gym more and more because I was always in the gym. You know, I would be there, especially, you know, once I got out of school, I'd be there from when I got out of school to when the gym closed. And Mitch would see me in there. And one day in the summer, he was like, hey, you just want to start training? And from then on, it just developed like we developed a great relationship. He became, like I said, one of my best friends. And I've kind of seen him evolve from training me just on the side as a side hustle. So now this is his profession, right? He's training Terrence Mann, Georges Niang, Duncan Robinson, Joey Baker, Jacob Granison, right? He's getting in the gym with so many different guys and using the constraint-led approach, which he's going to talk about this, using skill acquisition theories. Like, it's amazing to see where he's taken, you know, the training profession, because like I really do feel like he's changed the perspective on how people are working in basketball, whether it be like, you know, playing more live drills, you know, using the constraint-led approach. So it was a crazy episode, man, like a long time coming. We had talked about him getting on, I think, from day one when we started the podcast. But we finally got him on, and it was vibes, bro, for sure.
Nah, it definitely was vibes. I definitely could see, like, you know, the close relationship you guys have. You told me in private, but that, like, that's really your guy, like, one of your best friends. So I got a lot of respect for him. And I want to talk about the constraint-led approach, like, as a whole, just, like, your experience with it, too. But I want to start – like, I've never had a trainer or anything, but it makes, like, complete sense of why this works instead of, like, constant repetition in it. I'm not trying to throw any shade against trainers that use repetition workouts, because I was just listening to Phil Handy on Podcast P, and he was talking about how, like, that was what Kobe did. Like, just 45 minutes, I'm going to stay in one spot, work on the same move. And there's some positives to that, because, like, when you get to that spot, it doesn't matter what the defender does, like, I know I can get to this spot, and no matter how you guard me, and Kobe's perspective, no matter how you guard me, this shot is going in because I've done it 10, 20 times. So there's no shade to people that do that. But I do think that there needs to be a change in, you know, how some of these trainers are going about their workouts, because you brought it up, like, you're going to have different defenders in the game. So why would you work on the same thing if people are going to guard you differently? So, I mean, like, when I was going into college that offseason, I didn't do any 5-on-5, any 1-on-1. Like, I was strictly just doing cone work. And when I got to school, like, when we would do, like, drills and stuff, I would be one of the best players on the team. But when we played, I would be the worst. Like, people, there was 20 kids on our team, and I wouldn't get picked up at all. And it took this change of, like, the constraint-led approach in my workouts to finally see some development to the college game, because it, I mean, like, you're going to get different looks throughout the game. You have to be able to be adaptable, and that only comes from different experiences in your workouts. So, I mean, like, it, that you got to find a middle ground just like anything. But I really like that, that Mitch didn't just follow a trend, and he kind of like took New Hampshire, but now outside of New Hampshire by alert. And it was like, there's a different to, you know, this cone work. We can do something that's a little bit better, and it'll benefit all parties, the training and the person getting trained. So, I mean, it just makes sense. And I want to hear your thoughts, like, actually working with it.
Yeah, KJ, you bring up great points. I think with the constraint-led approach and, like, specific, like, drill movements, like, my opinion on it, and I've talked to Mitchell about this. Like, I do think, for example, like, I joked about an episode, like, Mitch hates when I do spot shooting, right? Because it's, like, literally you're doing the same shot usually over and over again. But that's the way – that's my – that's what I'm comfortable with when I'm getting shots up. I'm like, I feel like I'm working on that repetition. I'm working on – you know, muscle memory, again, my elbow tucked in, just seeing the ball go in the hoop. That's what I enjoy, right? And I think, like, you can have a mix of it. Like, let's say you start a workout with spot shooting just to warm up, see the ball go in, and then you work on live closeouts and reading off that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do think that there's a mix to it. And I love the constraint-led approach, bro. Like, when I got to Utica, right, my freshman year, I was, like, a good player, but – it was that sophomore year, that summer going into sophomore year, where I really started, like, locking in with Mitch every day, training with him, playing ones or playing threes every day, where I really start to see, like, a jump in my game. My handle got better. My quickness got better. My reads got better. And obviously, like, I didn't really, like, play much those 2 years, like, my sophomore year and junior year at Utica. But still, like, I was seeing, like, gradual improvements on my game, and, like, I kept chipping away at the process. So the constraint-led approach is great, bro. I'd much rather, you know, want to play one-on-one.
That's another thing. Like, it's fun. If you look at the Instagram reels that Mitch is posting, it's, like, kind of unique. Like, the defender starting with their back to the ball, and you got to react off of that. So he mentioned this, too. Like, it's helping the offense and the defense. It's not just, like, the person with the ball is getting better, is both sides, because you got to learn how to, you know, guard in uncomfortable positions or situations you're not really used to. So I definitely understand what you're saying.
Yeah, but, bro, it's great work. It's great work. You know, your body's not, like, too taxed after, I feel like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the perfect, because Mitch also, you know, he does a lot of stretching and, like, he takes the warm up and, like, the warm down, if that makes sense, serious. Like, mm-hmm. all that stuff is, like, very serious to him, how he treats his body. And some we didn't even talk about that I wanted to bring up. Like, he played pro. He played in Columbia.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, bro. He played pro. And, like, the dude, like, he did well. And, like, he was a good player at Babson, bro. He averaged, like, 10 a game on, like, good shooting splits. Like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 rebounds, 4 or 5 assists a game. Like, he was a solid player, bro. And he got the opportunity to play in Columbia, and he was playing well. But I just think that, you know, he's making a lot of rounds doing his training business. Like, he was, you know, training in London for a couple months, and he was able to, like, still make, you know, income training out there with, you know, connecting with different people out there. So he just has such a big network through this training business, bro, and has done so many things, like, played pro, played college basketball, like, He's on the up and up, bro, and there's no telling what his future is, honestly.
Nah, yeah. One thing that I think has also kind of helped him, this is my last point, but mm-hmm. you're like, trainers, we often think of, like, I'm just going to use you to, you know, kind of get better with basketball. But Mitch is also trying to develop these people as humans. Like, it's not just, you know, like, he wants to see Neruda be the best person in society, not just – like, on the basketball court. And that's something that we also might need to start looking at, is, like, we're spending all this money and time with trainers, but they're only helping us in one aspect of life. Like, they should provide a little bit more value, and that's something Mitch is doing. But, like, he started in New Hampshire, and now, like, I'm talking to some of my teammates. They seen him post us on Instagram and they're like, yo, that's tough. Like, you got Hoop and Mitch on the pod. It's like, his brand has definitely grown, and that must feel amazing for him, because we were talking, like, it didn't start. Like, he wasn't very popular off rip. Like, he had a grind. He was posting every day. So there's a lot of respect for him. And I don't know if you have any last thoughts, but I mean,
bro, I mean, with anything, it just, you know, it's, you got to take that first step forward, right? And not be, you know, not be afraid of what's going to happen. So for Mitch, like, I remember the first summer he really committed to, like, this training business in New Hampshire. He texted me. He was like, yo, send me 10 people in New Hampshire, some of the best players, you know, that will be down to train for the whole summer, right? So I sent some, like, I think like 6 guys. I sent some, my boy Kevin Cummings, Jaden Bobbitt, and then a couple other kids from Maine, right? And now Kevin and JB and me are now some of, like, his, like, day one clients. And then he texted, like, AJ Lesbert, who plays at Brown, Felix Kloman, who played at Brown, is now at Babson, Ethan McEachern, who's at, I talked about him on the pod before, he's at Rochester right now. He had Cal Connolly, who's now the assistant coach, player development coach for the Lakers. He was a part of that original group, right? So it's just like, he built a foundation, and he just, like, sent out the mass text and was like, yo, this is Mitch, this is what I do. Like, you guys come in for a free workout, and if you guys enjoy it, let's keep working. And then from then on, his clientele, like, list just built, and seen, like, Duncan Robinson, seen the Instagram reels and was like, yo, you got some kids in the gym. Like, whoa, all right. You know, you got some motion. You know what I'm saying? So, like, all it took was that first step forward, and now he's taking off. So it's good to see.
Yeah. But, I mean, we talked about a lot with Mitch, you know, getting into the training business. What inspired that? What inspired adapting the constraint-led approach? Because, you know, most trainers are still working on this cone one, or, you know, repetition stuff. So, and finally, like, kind of what's next? What motivates Mitch? All that is covered in the episode. So let's hear from Mitchell Kirsch. We are here with that boy, Mitchell Kirsch. How you doing today, bro?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yes, sir, bro. It's a long time coming. We've definitely, we've been talking about this for a little bit. So glad to get you on, bro, for sure.
I appreciate it. I'm really excited. I think this goes back full circle for us, Neruda and KJ. I'm super pumped to get to meet you in person finally after seeing your face on either IG or whatever else doing this pod. So love what you guys are doing.
Yeah, appreciate that. So I want to start, just like, you're a professional trainer and we haven't had a trainer on the pod yet. So I'm kind of curious, like, what's the day in the life of a professional trainer?
It's a great question. And it definitely depends on the time of the year. So in the summer, the busy season for me, it's wake up and I'm pretty much in the gym all day long. I'll try and sneak in a quick breakfast, maybe a coffee on the road, but we're getting to the gym around 8 a.m. And this past summer, usually 8 a.m. was with Joey Baker, former Blue Devil, and then played at Michigan. He's now in his second season in the G League. So we would go early morning, and then we would start in Manchester, Mass, by the sea with our Elevate group there, which was a little bit of a younger group, so mostly middle school and high school kids. And so our other trainers would come, and we're running that with pretty big numbers. And then about halfway through that, I'll break off. And we had Jordan Miner in the gym, another guy who actually made another G League roster. So he'll do his individual with me and a few other coaches as the rest of the guys are finishing up in the weight room. And then after that, it's a little bit of mobilizing, getting on the road. We go from Manchester by the sea, Mass, to Exeter, New Hampshire. And it was typically Duncan Robinson, middle of the day, getting him on the court for hour and a half. And then after that, we would move into Elevate Academy at night, which is the college group and high school group. And that time, sometimes we have 50, 60 kids in the gym, and that's 2 hours of on-court work and weight room work. And then after that, try and go back, get to sleep, maybe post a few Instagram videos, do a little editing, and then basically repeat that 7 days a week all summer.
Definitely a packed schedule, Mitch. And you know, one thing I've always kind of wondered, like, how do you like, so during the workouts, like now at this point, like you'll have like interns basically working for you and like doing a lot of like the defense or like passing. But like, how do you keep that like energy throughout the day? Cause like your energy is very infectious. Like you're always like talking, like chirping at me or whatever it may be. So I want to hear that side of it. And how do you stay energized?
Absolutely. I think part of it is the sleep aspect. Like I go hard during the day, but I am super efficient with my sleep and like really prioritize my sleep. I could go into a whole bunch of things on that as far as like how I max out my sleep. But I think probably the better answer is every single day is a new challenge and it requires me to be present and fully aware if I'm going to be helping the players the most. And I just genuinely love being on the court. So it's really easy for me to keep going. And if I don't really feel tired throughout the day. I will say once the summer's over and it comes fall time and I don't have as much training, then that's when I'll usually like, I'll sleep like 12 hours a day for a few weeks. Cause I think my body's like kind of recovering from it. But in the summer, it's just, I just love the go time. It's what I live for, is just being on the court, challenging guys, having fun. It gives me energy to be on the court.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about like when you have a passion for something or when you love something, it doesn't really feel like work. It's just something you enjoy. So I can see how that pushes you. But you mentioned that you can go like so far into the sleep aspect. And bro, I'm struggling with sleep right now. So let's have that conversation. Like you said, you max out your sleep. So I'm just curious about that.
Absolutely. So I got the Whoop right here. I've been wearing this for probably 5 years. I took it off for maybe a year in the middle there, but just got super interested in it and noticed that when I was sleeping at 100% of my sleep need and like getting quality sleep, when I was a player, I would shoot over 40% from three, like almost 100% of the time. And so when I saw that link up, I was like, oh, all right, this is almost more important than what I do in the gym. Like at a certain point you're in the season, like your work's done. You just got to show up and be ready. It's more like a maintenance and maybe improve a little bit. But when I saw that, I was like, this is what I need to do, what I can do best to improve my on-court performance. So a lot of it is keeping a routine. I will try and wake up and go to bed at the same time. I'll try and get about 10 hours time in bed. And that usually for me is around 9 hours of sleep. And then I also have a company with sleep products because I got so into it. And so there's mouth tape that I wear. I've got a nasal expander, a nose strip that's lavender scented. And then I have blackout eye mask on. So I'm like totally locked in every night. As soon as I slide that eye mask on and put the mouth tape on, I know I'm ready to sleep and my body is just set. And I typically fall asleep within 5 minutes. And then there's also some side of it is a supplement. I do a magnesium before bed, quite a bit of magnesium. I think that's something that a lot of athletes are deficient in. So magnesium, and then get the routine down same time every day. And I think for many people, if you do that, you're going to sleep really nicely.
Appreciate that, Brody.
If you follow, so it's kind of interesting, just for the audience, like if you follow Mitch on Instagram, Hooping Mitch on Instagram, little plug, but if you follow him on Instagram, like you'll see, like you post about your sleep and like the hours that you get like every night, you know what I'm saying? And you're always like saying like, there's a connection there. Like, come on guys, like you guys got to see. So I definitely appreciate that you're trying to like make sure like athletes know like how important that side of it is. Cause it is, you need sleep to be able to function throughout the day.
For sure. There's a study by Stanford that's a lot of people talk about, and they had their basketball team intentionally sleep more hours. And you look at every different metric from their physical outputs, like there's, I think it was like their sprints, maybe some vertical jump metrics. But then their percentages on court in game were much, much higher when they got, I think they went from maybe 7 or 8 hours average to over 9 to 10. And it's just, the only intervention was sleeping more. And so that's something a lot of the players that I've worked with have implemented, and they'll notice that in their statistics. It does improve. But at the same time, you can't be stressed out about it and freak out, it's always that happy medium, because if you're too like locked into it and you get a little anxious about it, you're not going to sleep well at the same time. So it's always that happy medium for sure.
100%. So I want to bring it back all the way to, you know, when you were a kid growing up, and I wanted to ask you first, like, so I know that your dad played basketball at Babson, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you grew up with Max, who's your older brother, and Carly, who's your little sister. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, what type of influence do you think that your dad had on you and, like, your siblings' athletic careers?
My dad is the biggest competitor that I know. He texted me today, fresh off of 2 meniscus surgeries, about pickleball when I get back and how he's going to beat me in pickleball. Like,
he is going to beat you. He's a dog.
No chance. He is good. But I don't know. He might. Like, that's why I keep training, because I got to be ready. And, like, that's always how it was. He never let us win. And I think when we got close is when we stopped playing basketball. He stopped playing because he was like, I'm not going to let my kids beat me. But up until he was probably in his 50s, and we would still be at Exeter playing one-on-one. We designed the drills, actually. This was like the first sneak peek into the constraints-led approach, which is what I do 100% of the time now. But my dad had designed a one-on-one game so that he could continue to play with us. And it was called 3-2-1. Naruto and I played this summer. And so you start, you get 3 dribbles. Once you get to 7, you get 2 dribbles. Then get to 7, you have to score 7 points on 1 dribble to win the one-on-one game. And that's the game we played almost every single day. My brother, my dad, myself, and we would just compete. And my dad kind of designed it that way because he didn't want to have to guard us doing a bunch of different dribble moves, but he knew he could get to his spots and just shoot over the top of us. So he just instilled that competitive fire. And for me, as the youngest of all of them, I had to find ways to scrap, because physically they were going to be stronger, taller, faster for much of it. So I just had to find new ways to do it. And I think that's part of the reason why I just was so competitive as a player. It's because that's the only way I could ever have a chance in my own driveway.
100%. I mean, we talk about a couple of different things, but when you talk about competitiveness, I mean, I've seen it, especially from you and your brother. Like, you know, I remember vividly when, you know, I was going to school in Exeter, and I remember you guys had gotten to, let's say, an argument during a pickup game in front of all a bunch of college coaches, you know what I'm saying? But then when you guys played like maybe tilting or something like that, and someone hit you with a hard screen, Max came down the next end and popped whoever hit you. You know what I'm saying? So that competitive fire I've always seen in you and your brothers and your dad and Carly. And, you know, I'm just wondering too. So you actually went to Babson for your grad year. So I'm wondering, how much of an influence did your dad playing at Babson have on you to go there? But also, like, what was your mindset heading into that year? And what was it like competing for a program like Babson?
Yeah, Babson's a great program, man. I can't say enough positive things about the school and the basketball program, the coaches, the people. Just the love for basketball and how much they value it is something I'll always be grateful for. And I felt like when I got to Babson, I was so aligned with their philosophies on basketball and just how important it was. So that was one of my most fun years as far as playing basketball. And with my dad, like, it's funny, growing up as a part of those one-on-one battles, like, that was always the joke. It was like, I'm going to be way better than Babson. Like, you kidding me? You played at Babson. All right. And like, he's still watching his film from 1900s, where he, you know, there's no 3-point line, and he's showing me how to make a correct bounce pass and all this stuff. I'm like, come on, Dad, this is Babson. Like, I don't want to see this stuff. And, you know, fast forward, I had basically finished up at Claremont and had that extra year because of COVID. And I was looking for schools that, one, took basketball super seriously, and two, had high academic 1-year programs that were aligned with my interest. And at that point, I had already had the training business going, and Babson had a really awesome entrepreneurial program where you would essentially take the business or idea or the one that you had and try and elevate it within that year. And so it really just aligned on all fronts. And because I had been going to so many Babson games as a kid. I had known the coaching staff. I was familiar with a lot of the players. I was always kind of involved with Babson in some regard. And so it just made it an easy call to make. And luckily, like, it just fit as far as what they needed on their roster, academics. I was going back home on the East Coast. So everything just made a lot of sense. And for me, like, I went to high school in New Hampshire. Very common for everybody in my family to be at games. And then when I was my first 4 years of college being out in California, my parents would come to games. My grandparents would come to some games, but it wasn't like it was when I was back in high school. So coming to Babson was another cool thing, like a homecoming for my grandparents to come to all the games, my parents. That was a special thing before ending my college career.
Yeah. So you said that you had the training business when you were, was it when you were at Claremont Motorscripts?
Yeah, I mean, shoot, Naruto was my first client, so I don't know when we started training. I might have still been in high school, but
wow, that's crazy. So, I mean, like, people 5 years ago or however long it was, maybe was that 10 years ago, Ruda?
So I think real, like, when we really first, like, when Mitch asked me to first get in the gym, I was going to be a sophomore at Kimball Union. So it was 2016, 2017. It was that summer.
So that's
my sophomore year. So
that's
6 years
ago. Like, training, you know, it's become popular now, but back then I imagine, like, there wasn't a ton of buzz in that field. So my question for you is basically, like, what made you want to get into the player development or training side of things? Because, like, coaches talk about how it was a coach that inspired them to get into coaching, or is an event that happened that they knew they wanted to get into that field. So I just want to hear from you what inspired you to get into player development.
I think a huge part of it is just being from New Hampshire, where there aren't just a ton of hoops. There aren't pickup games that you can go to whenever. And so a lot of your development in New Hampshire is just you're in your driveway or you go to the gym by yourself. And it's really common for there not to be another person in the gym for 3 hours. And so Naruto knows it well. Like, that's kind of how you grow up in New Hampshire. If you want to take basketball to the next level, you got to be probably doing more than other people because you don't have the ability to get as many live reps. You don't have the fierce competition. Like, there are just a lot of environmental factors that play into it, and it has to be a self-driven thing. And so as a part of that, I knew if I wanted to play in college or play professionally, I had to take my training super seriously. And I essentially had to become my own trainer. And that's really where the love started. And then just spending so many times in the gym, that became the place that I knew the most and enjoyed being the most. And I would see Naruto there a bunch because we were on that same mission, and we would play around with different training techniques, just finding ways to try and get better at basketball. And that's really how it started. And it's just kind of developed from there. You really see it's not really about basketball. It's more about developing into a person you want to be. And basketball is just the medium for that. And so that's how it started. And that's where it's just continued to evolve to, you know, like, basketball is still the medium. That's not the end goal, but it has a really cool community. And I think now in New Hampshire, what I'm trying to build is something that Naruto and I didn't have growing up, where you can get into the gym on a random summer night and there are 60 kids that are probably the 60 best kids in the area really competing. Because if we had that growing up, I think we would have done more with our careers. Like, we would have been better players, and we probably would have had a better community in the sport. So that's what we're trying to build. And that's largely where it started, was just basically being alone in the driveway, wanting to get better and having to do that on my own, just figure it out.
Yeah. I love that answer, bro. And I find that interesting. I don't know if you know who Dom Lamorda is, but I was talking to him before. He's a trainer as well. And he was saying how his influence was just being in the gym by himself and realizing, like, I got to get better on my own. And that led him to, you know, finding his passion. So I feel like that's pretty interesting. But I mean, we talked about how Ruda was your first client, and 2016, Ruda was telling me that he was asked back in the day. So, so what I want to hear, like, what you remember about, you know, first getting your first client being Ruda, and then you know, how that kind of stapled your passion in the industry of training development.
For sure. We got to take some time to give Ruta his flowers here, because I don't think there are many players that would have continued to get in the gym and just grind and to become the player he has become today. From where he started is a remarkable journey. Like, he would just continually show up, and it was for the love of the game. Didn't matter what anyone else was saying, he was going to show up and he was going to compete. And doing that day over day for over 10 years, he became a really, really good player. And I think seeing that from you as a sophomore, I was even watching him when he was younger, when you probably couldn't even make a three-pointer. Like, to go to now, like, you hold the record for many of our shooting drills, and that includes some of the best three-point shooters in the NBA, you know? Like, that growth and that trajectory is a testament to Ruta just staying in the gym and just showing up every single day. And when I would tell him something that probably many people didn't want to hear, he just took it to heart, maybe thought on it for a few hours, and then the next morning we're back in the gym, you know? And so that's really what it is. I don't honestly remember the question, but I just want to give Ruta his flowers for consistently putting the work in, consistently competing, because if you can do that, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you consistently do something with intensity and you have a goal, you're going to get better at it.
Yeah. So I know you said you forgot the question. So I was just kind of curious, like, how that kind of stapled your passion and like getting your first client and seeing that grow from there.
For sure. I would say, like, Ruta is a great example of, like, we used basketball, and he got so much better at basketball, but because of all the things he learned along the way, now he's, look at what he's doing in society. And a lot of it is still using basketball as a medium, but inspiring so many other people, getting this message out about Division III players, still competing at a super high level. Like, that is what fires me up. And for me, it's the same journey. Like, I'm still using basketball to try and become a better person. Like, it teaches me a work ethic. It teaches me commitment, consistency, resilience. There are so many things from basketball that people benefit from. And so that's the fire. And that's what motivates me for sure, is just using it as a medium to become a better person and learn more about the people around you.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Ruta. I mean, he's impacted our lives greatly. So we're just blessed to know the kid, I guess. But this is going to be the last question before we take a quick break. But one thing I always kind of question about trainers is, so you, a player like may contact you, like, I'm willing, or I'm looking to get into the gym with you. I see what you're doing. What is your individual process on how you're kind of designing the workout for them? Like, do you watch their film first? Do you ask them what they're looking to do? Like, just talk to me about the whole process. When someone contacts you, like, I'm interested to, you know, the first workout.
For sure. A lot of it depends on the level, because now it's at a point where we've got a lot of different programs for a lot of different levels. So if we have somebody, for example, that's at like the G League level, a lot of that will be probably one communicated through the agent of dealing with how we want to progress with their development. And we'll take maybe some development cues from some scouts or maybe their previous college. I'll talk to a lot of their coaches. I'll talk to the player themselves. And we really try and get a full picture of where they're trying to go with basketball. And especially at that level, like, it is it's a personal choice. There are guys, like, you take this kid named Jordan Miner. He played at Merrimack, player of the year, played at Virginia, and now this past summer was kind of a decision point for him. He could go to France and probably average 20 and 10 and progress in the European systems, or he could make a run at the NBA, and that would be a risk of he has to go try out for a G League team, try and get on the roster, then scrap for minutes. And ultimately, that's his decision. And so we had a lot of conversations on that. And we decided, all right, we got to throw away the European balls. You're only using NBA balls because we're going for the G League right now. And so that's kind of the initial process. And then as far as once we're in the gym, it is being really specific to the game actions they're going to be put in. And Ruta knows this well. If we're doing an individual workout, that usually means there are at least four people on the court. That means the player will be there, I'll be there, and then we're going to have at least two defenders or passing options or other people so that we can try and mimic those game scenarios. So it's always about trying to create environments that represent what they're going to face in the game. So for Jordan, because we knew where he wanted to get to, a lot of that was trying to develop the stretch four capability. And so we spent a ton of time out of the pick and pop scenarios, reading the right defense, whether that means shooting the ball, maybe it means rolling, attacking a closeout, and just getting a ton of reps in those scenarios. So he's facing a lot of variability, but in one workout, he might get an equivalent amount of reps that he will get in maybe 10 games. And so we're just trying to put him in so many different environments like that where he's having to solve problems and just repeatedly solve those problems.
Yeah, I mean, bro, I'm so interested in what you're talking about. We got a lot more to talk about, so stay with us while I take a quick break.
All right, so we're back with the Not Even D2 podcast with Mitchell Kirsch. You know, I think just for the audience, just to, and KJ too, to give them some little bit of a context about this, I want you to explain and imagine that, you know, I'm a parent and I'm basically asking you to train my kid. And I have some questions about the constraint-led approach and skill acquisition theories. So basically, when did the constraint-led approach become the model that you use for your workouts? And just explain a little bit about it to me, because I don't really understand, even though I do.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's something that the majority of people in the world probably don't even have it on their radar. And then if they do, they're probably confused about it. And the way I eventually got towards it was a largely just trial and error in my own career. And then once I started training kids, I would spend so much time doing what my coaches told me, whether that was, you know, shooting 500 shots, doing the same move 100 times in a workout, like kind of what Kobe has talked about. You just have to get the reps, get the muscle memory. And I would do all that stuff, and I was getting better, but probably not at the rate you would expect for the amount of work I was putting in. And so I just started eventually to change it up. And I would see different things online and try those things out. And whether I was doing it on my own or maybe with other players, like I would get feedback from that. And then I would actually get to see once they were in the game, if it was translating over. And so when I was my junior year at Claremont was probably the biggest shift for me, because it was COVID time, and I started working at a gym out in Irvine. And they had seen that I had some training experience. At that point, I had done some sessions with Duncan. I was doing the training thing, but not to the level or with as much knowledge as I'm doing it with now. And so I got the chance to work with the youth group out there, and that ended up being me with 30 kids in the gym, and we had six hoops. And so the challenge for me was, how do I make sure all these kids are engaged? Like, it was purely a skill session for them. It's not a team practice. We didn't have shared principles or shared sets that we were trying to practice. I was just really trying to help them improve their skills. And so one of the easiest ways to keep everybody engaged and having fun was just to pair everything up. If we're practicing offense, it has defense. If we're practicing defense, it has offense. And so that's when it kind of hit me as like, this is what I need to do because of the constraints I was under myself. And then I started to notice, one, the kids absolutely loved it. We started to grow. We went from 30 to 50 really quickly, and kids didn't skip workouts. They showed up with so much energy. I was like, all right, that's a positive. And then two, they started to do things that I didn't think they could ever do in like a very quick amount of time. And so I would see things in live scenarios because we're always practicing somewhat live. I was like, oh wow, like where did you learn how to do that? And they would be like, oh, I've never done that before. So then it really, for me, questioned the idea of, do you need to have done something a million times before actually doing it on the court? And the answer was clearly no, you don't. And so I started to look into it more, and that's kind of my nerdy bias. Like, I've always been a pretty academic guy, and I would just try and do my own research on things. And that's what led me down the evidence-based route and looking into different movement theories. And you basically learn that 99% of what people have been told gets them better at basketball is all based off of movement theory that's outdated, that's basically been disproven. And so then you really start to question all the things that are done in the game of basketball from a training perspective or a practice perspective. And you look at it and you're like, oh, maybe there's actually a better way. Like, if you're playing a ton of basketball, it's going to be hard to get worse. But if you're training in a way that is aligned with some of the principles studied in the field of skill acquisition, which is literally about trying to get people better at skills, maybe you can actually get better faster. And that's probably where we want to spend most of our time. And so after that, I just dove into it with my own training, with all the players that I worked with. It just made a ton of sense, both from it's more fun perspective, it gets players better perspective, it's a better business model because players are getting better, they're having fun, and you can actually work with more players. Like, the one-on-O private training method isn't very scalable. So it just, from all perspectives, it made way more sense. And so just going all in on it was the natural thing to do. And I think now it's been one of the best things for me as a trainer, because the bottom line is the players that come and train with us are usually getting a lot better than the players that are training with people that are just doing cone drills or one-on-O work. And it's pretty clear in the numbers. One thing I am tracking currently is points per game, percentages, year over year changes with the guys that have been working with us. And I think it's been pretty exciting to see the improvements from everybody. And it works whether you're in middle school or in college, high school, NBA players, G League players. Like, it all applies to any human, because that's largely the basis of it. It's rooted in ecological psychology and dynamical systems theory, if we want to get super nerdy, but that just applies to all humans. That's what it's about. And we're not computers, we're human beings, we're dynamic things. And so you can't treat things as a linear process. And that's what the constraint-led approach allows for, is it allows for that chaos. It allows for the problem solving. It allows for the interconnectedness of humans to express themselves and get better in environments.
I mean, a couple of different things that I wanted to touch on. I mean, first, when you hear, I mean, you see a lot of, I feel like, NBA teams using the constraint-led approach, or maybe even players using the constraint-led approach without even knowing it. Like, for example, Peyton Pritchard, I read an article online that he actually, like, will pay 4 or 5 overseas players to guard him just for a whole day, and will just play one-on-one with them, right? So that's a perfect example of, like, it's like he's not going to make the same move. He's not going to do a tween cross every time he plays them. Like, it's good. They're going to guard him a different way. He's going to attack their foot a different way. You know what I mean? And from working out with you, it has made me change the way I look at, like, basketball and, like, basketball practices, trainings. Cause it's like, imagine if you're in a group workout, right? And the coach is telling everyone in the group, all right, you're going to go to this cone, do this crossover, and then split the screen. Right. But then it's like you're in a group workout with 4 or 5 guys. Why do we don't have, like, the biggest kid send the screen, and then whoever's guarding the screen, they have to have a different they have to guard it differently every time they use it. Right. So it's giving the player a different read so they can make. So when the game time comes, it's like, all right, I've seen the head screen. This is the play. This is a play I could make. You know what I mean? So definitely working out with you has changed the way I look at, you know, my own practices, you know, training, the way I work out. I know you still get mad when I do spot shooting. But no, definitely, bro. You're definitely changing the way people look at hoops, bro, for sure.
I appreciate that. I mean, you look at the NBA right now, two teams that are heavy, heavy invested into the constraint-led approach are the Cavs and the Celtics. they're doing pretty well. And yeah,
they're pretty good.
A lot about embracing the chaos and setting up their players in situations where they need to solve problems that are similar to what they're going to face. Like that just, it just makes sense if you think about it from some common sense standpoint.
Yeah, one thing I was wondering, like, you have your own philosophy training, and there's tons of trainers, like, on the internet. They post their content. Are there any specific, like, trainers or guys that you listen to or take some of their workouts and put them into your workouts, or trainers that you just, like, admire or think that they do a good job?
For sure. And a lot of them are outside of basketball, because the majority of the research is actually not done on basketball. It's done on invasion sports. So any sport where the other person can just go into your territory and take the ball, and you're trying to defend a goal, they're trying to attack. And it's all the same principles. So you say a trainer, I actually think Rob Gray from Arizona State University is a guy who's heavy into baseball, but he's a skill acquisition specialist. His podcast, Perception Action Coupling, or Perception Action Podcast, I think is what it's called, is one of the best resources out there. And he talks about basketball for sure, but a lot of it is not basketball. And so you can take those principles and apply them to the game. There's a guy out of New Hampshire who's gotten heavy into evidence-based coaching and the constraint-led approach. His name's Noah LaRoche, who's now with the Grizzlies. So again, another NBA expansion to the constraint-led approach. I've always enjoyed what he's done. He's evolved quite a bit. I used to train with him a little bit towards my end of my high school career. And at that point we were doing form shooting with group workouts. And we would make 25 from three different spots. And now that's evolved to, you know, practicing with constraints. Everything has defense coupled with it. You're making decisions. It's a lot more engaging process. It's more about self-organization than muscle memory. So those are two guys that I really look up to. I think Alex Sarama has a ton of good stuff, a guy from England who's now with the Cavs as the director of player development. So those are some guys that I talk to quite a bit or look up to or have seen their stuff and really enjoy it. Ricky Broadmoor, a guy out in London I work with quite a bit. I'll go out and I'll work out with him. I like what he does. So there are a lot of people that are, you know, getting the word out, but there's also a lot of people that still are thinking about basketball in a traditional sense. And honestly, you can't fault them, because if you truly believe that humans are like computers, then a lot of the training methods you see would make a lot of sense. But that theory that humans are built like computers and we have a processing system where we go back and we file things and then pick the best thing for the scenario, that's just not really supported anywhere. So that's, for me, like the biggest thing to try and get out there is, hey, this theory that 99% of the common basketball drills you see are built off of doesn't really hold up when you test it. And so if we can just change that theory and get people to understand the basics of it, I think a lot more people will shift their focus on how we should be training basketball.
One thing that I can respect about you and how you've kind of inspired me is, like, you've never really cared what anyone else has said about this, you know, your journey into the constraint-led approach, skill acquisition theory, perception-action coupling. Like, you've never cared about the response. You've just been like, this is what I believe, and I'm going to go 2 feet. I'm going to dive 2 feet in, and I'm going to help teach you, and I'm going to explain to you what I think. And if you disagree, that's your prerogative. You're allowed to do that. You know what I'm saying? But you've stayed true to who you are and what you believe. And I respect that. And that's for anyone. Like, if you really care about something, if you really believe deeply about something, then don't stray away from it. Just keep going, keep believing in it. So I definitely respect that about you, bro.
I appreciate that. But at the same time, it's like, if I'm coaching the same way I am right now in 5 years, I'm not doing it right, because I want to keep learning. And the hypothesis of having or hiring a basketball trainer is that people can get better if you put in consistent work at something. And the same should go for coaches. The same should go for trainers. Like, you should be developing at the same time. And so that's my mission, is hopefully that in 5 years, 10 years from now, I'm looking back at what I'm doing now, and I'm like, oh, that was dumb. I should have been doing this. I could have done this better. So we'll see how it evolves. But I do appreciate that. You got to drown out the noise at some point, because many people that you hear from, especially if it's on social media, guarantee they don't do even a fraction of the research or have the experiences of working with hundreds, if not thousands, of players like we have.
I mean, constant growth mindset. KJ and I talk about this all the time. I mean, that's the trademark of a great coach. So not surprised that you got that mindset, Mitch. But this going to wrap it up, honestly. I have one last question, but it's been a great episode talking with you, man. And I'm glad we were able to get you on. But you kind of talked about this in the beginning of the episode. You have basically kind of come onto the forefront of New Hampshire basketball and kind of changed the perception, I think, when it comes to like New England basketball, of like where New Hampshire is in that place, if that makes sense. And you changed the culture within the state, right? Having like 60 guys are all from New Hampshire, all in the gym at the same time. So I'm just wondering, like, how does that feel for you to have that type of impact on a state where you grew up in?
I appreciate you saying that. I don't think about it too much, to be honest. For me, I just like being in the gym with guys that are competitive and that want to get better. There were definitely a few moments like this past summer when I would, you know, be sitting in the gym and just, you look out and you see how many people are there. You see all the coaches just giving everything to the kids. And it's you can reflect and be grateful for it. But most of my time, I'm just totally focused on helping these players get better, because I do feel that New Hampshire isn't, I wouldn't say it's underrated, but people don't give it enough respect. And there are a lot of great players that can come out of New Hampshire. And I think if we just kind of pool that talent, we can do a lot of great things. So really, really appreciate you saying that. But I guess my philosophy is just day by day showing up. And if we can just make tiny improvements every single day over the long run, then the whole group will get better.
100%, bro. You've been saying gems throughout the episode. I really like what you're saying. I wasn't too familiar with, you know, like your business and your training philosophy, but I'm a big fan now. So I appreciate that. And we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire, starting five edition. So let us know you're ready for a rapid fire.
Let's do it.
All right. So first rapid fire question. I need you to give me a list of the top three or four funniest players that you've ever trained.
Carson Curtis, shout out Carson, little middle schooler. He is one of the most personal dudes. He's in that top three. I'm probably going to throw in AJ Lesbert. Just ruptured his eye, regenerated. He's back. He's shooting with some
goggles. Wearing the goggles, bro.
He's been playing pretty well. He makes probably the weirdest noises after he screws up in training. Will also come with the craziest fits in training too.
Oh, yeah.
And then third, it was crazy or funny or just funny?
Funny.
I'm just going to give a shout out to the full Manchester by the Sea basketball crew. They are just as a group, some weird dudes, but they will make me laugh. I mean, honestly, I'll throw Cal in there too. He's a coach, but Cal is hilarious.
Shout out Cal Connolly, man. You know, player development coach with the Lakers right now, doing big things. Definitely shout out my guy. Next rapid fire question. So we usually ask coaches like their favorite memory from like their time as a coach. So I'm just wondering, I know you're in the gym all the time and you're training so many different guys, but if you have like a specific memory, and maybe it doesn't have to be like when you're on the court, maybe an off the court time where you were just chilling, hanging out. Do you have a memory like that that you cherish?
There was definitely a time this summer where we were at Govs and we had six NBA guys on the court all at once. And that was a really cool moment for me, for sure. Because in general, New Hampshire doesn't have a ton of NBA talent. We do have some hoopers, though. But to have everybody there in the gym competing with Elevate Basketball was a cool moment for sure. So I would put that one up there. I think we'll have a lot more of those moments this coming summer. And then I'll put another one up for grabs. I think it will be one of my prouder memories, will be watching Naruto on senior night.
Hey, let's go, man. I'm definitely excited to have you there, bro. It's going to be a first full circle moment. Honestly, another memory. I know you didn't ask me about a rapid fire question, but another memory that I have.
Can I do that? I can ask you guys rapid fire?
Hey, maybe another time, man, because I don't know if I could come up with an answer on the spot like you. But one memory that I do have from, like, your time training was when we went to Los Olas. It's a little burrito spot, KJ. I'm going to take you there when you come to New Hampshire. We went to Los Olas after the last day at Elevate 2 summers ago, and, like, everyone was, like, laughing, having a good time. We were all sitting there, and I was like, bro, this is what you created. Just always remember that shit. That shit, this is, it's never been done before, so. Definitely a memory that I have from you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%. And then last rapid fire question. I know you're not a big, like, music during workouts guy. So I'm going to ask this. Who do you think the guys who have played the best, the guys who have played music during the workouts, who got the best playlist? I got to hear this. This is going to cause some controversy.
Oh, absolutely. We could go, this could be a full podcast on itself. Ruta, you do have good music, especially when.
He does.
When I want to listen to any Spanish music, like I appreciate that, and you always have it queued up. I will say Duncan also has a really good playlist. I like his music. I think that's he's a little niche, but after he played Morgan Wallen, then all of a sudden I catch Ruta listening to Morgan Wallen in the next workout. So now I'm curious if Ruta's taste is truly his, or if he's just stealing it from other people.
He might have cracked the code.
But Ruta's good. Duncan's got some good beats. I don't know who else I trust. I would guess like Noah Googs I would trust on the aux, honestly. Ethan, Kev are probably – Kev's questionable for sure. Ethan would have an opinion for sure. I don't know what he would play. I think whatever Ethan would play, I wouldn't believe he would actually listen to himself. But we could go down the list. I think I would have to give Duncan the medal just because like he plays his music every single workout and I typically like it.
So he's unapologetic about his music, so I can't even hate on it.
Yeah, it's a lot of country. Quinn XCII or however you say his name. He's got good music for sure.
I respect that. So we're going to end this episode with a little Starting Five edition. So basically, if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the best players that you've trained.
All right. That's a good line, a good question. All right, I'll put shooting guard Duncan.
And also just say where they're playing right now. Obviously, we know Duncan. Okay, but
Duncan, Miami Heat. I'll put small forward George Niang with the Cavs. I will put point guard. I'll put Jeremy Lin at point guard. I wouldn't say I trained him, but I helped in a training session that he was in.
That counts.
Josh Fan, another great trainer. I'll put him in the list of guys that I really look up to. So I got the chance to help out with that in California. So I'll put him at the point. Power forward. Power forward, I'll put Jordan Miner. That's my guy right there. I could put him at a stretch. I could put him at the five too if I needed to. So now I'm looking for a four or a five. There were some good guys out in California that I worked with. Some guys that went to USC. Trying to think. Some guys at BC, pretty solid. Some guys at Harvard that like just the big guys in general are pretty solid. But if I had to, maybe I could slide some people up. Like I could put Duncan at the small forward. And George at the power, and then I feel like I'm gonna be disrespecting people. I have to put Terrence Mann in there, but
yeah,
like I haven't trained him as much. And then I'll put Joey Baker and Jacob Grandison as the Jacob Grandison coming off the bench, maybe, or Joey off the bench for the sixth person. I'll just slide everybody up. So
that's
Jordan's playing the five. He's G League with the Long Island Nets. We got Georges at the power forward Cavs, Duncan, small forward Heat, Joey Baker, Grandison, both G League guys. Grandison just got hurt, unfortunately. He was with the Warriors G League team. And then Jeremy Lin, I don't know where he's playing right now. But yeah, that would be my five for now.
That's a tough lineup, bro. You train some elite players. That's tough.
But yeah, Naruto's coming off the bench too.
I heard you. Yes, sir. He all I need coming is off the too. Bench sparking, yeah. But that's going to do it for another episode. I'm not even D2. We definitely appreciate your time, Mitch, and this is a really good conversation. Looking forward to seeing what drills you post on IG coming up, and keep up the good work, my guy.
I appreciate it. Thanks for what you guys are doing.
So before we end the episode, we're going to introduce a new segment called Only in D3, where Neruda and I will tell maybe a funny story or, just a general story that you only hear in Division III athletes, or what goes on in the day-to-day life as a Division III student athlete. And it could be from, our whole career or this past week, but just lighten the mood a little bit, preferably something funny. So I don't know if you want to go first or if you want me to start, but let me know.
Yeah, I mean, all right. So let's hopefully it's funny. I guess it's comedy is subjective, so we'll see.
Yeah, but I didn't want to go first because I didn't know how people were going to, judge mine.
All right, I'll take the fall. Sorry, bro. All right, basically, okay. So let's start it with over finals, we couldn't really practice that much because obviously a finals, everyone had different final schedule, and I don't think you're technically like really allowed to get in the gym really. Mm-hmm. But like, some of us had organized like playing 3-on-3 and stuff like that, making sure we were still tapping the lab, getting shots up and shit. Whatever. So we play for like finals week, and towards the end of the week, we start practicing that Thursday, Friday. So we get to Thursday, Friday practice, and it's fine, it goes well. And on Friday, coach is like, all right, I'll see you guys tomorrow. Saturday practice, we're gonna get some work in, whatever. So I get up early Saturday morning and go get some shots up before practice, right? And I'm stepping on the court, and I have like relatively new shoes, my D books, and I'm like trying to like step when I get on the court. I'm like sliding, like my foot just keeps like sliding. I'm like, yo, this court is fucked up. Like, what's going on? So I walk around the court, and it's still like it's my feet are just like it feels like my shoes are like greasy. Maybe I don't even know. So I'm like, all right, yo, this court is messed up. Maybe it's my shoes, whatever. So we go down to film. We watch film on Hobart. We go upstairs, and bro, everyone is like, yo, this court is off right now. Like, what's going on? What's going on? So Coffee starts telling the assistant coaches, like, yo, get the brooms out, get the mop out. So they start mopping the floor, and Coffee goes, all right, I need everyone on the baseline. We're all going to start walking a straight line, and if you find a greasy spot, you're going to stop there. So we start walking, and I'm like, and everyone, like the first 30 seconds, like, yo, there's a spot right here. There's a spot right here. There's a spot right here. And you see Coffee like stressing. So he's like, all right, put your shoes in try to put your traction in like the little, like the water for the mop. Like, see if you get some like traction off that. So we're looking at him like, yo, not gonna work, fam. Like, the court just messed up. So we put our shoes in like a little mop water, whatever, try using it. Still doesn't work. So after countless tries of like trying to get the court, like Coffee's like trying to mop the court up, it doesn't work, bro. The court is still slick as hell. And we started, he was like, all right, we're gonna practice, like, but like we're gonna do like some shooting. And he's like, I don't want any guys like, like exaggerating or acting like they're about to fall. Like, just be careful. We're gonna like take it slow. And we ended up like just getting shots up and like walking through plays and stuff like that. And that was it. But that's basically my only at D3 story. The court was messed. So what happened was the court was messed up because I guess the janitor didn't change the pads for like the little machine that they like sit on and like
roll on the court.
They ain't changed the pads, or maybe they had like taken the machine out to the hallway where like the it was like salt. There was like a lot of salt from the snow, and then they got onto the court and shit was greasy as hell. So they just had to change the pads, and you know the next day the court was like back to brand new. But only at D3 some shit like that
happened, bro. Bro, like I go to Alfred, so it's like in the middle of nowhere. The weather gets bad anytime it snows, rains, any humidity. Like the court is just always messed up. There was one practice, I think it was my sophomore year, like there was like four people that fell like pretty hard because the floor is just messed up, and that shit that you won't see at other divisions. But mine isn't kind of like as funny as yours. Is I'm gonna just talk about two little things that happened this week, and then I'm gonna give one that happened like my freshman year that's a little bit more funny. So we played Buff State, and it's like over break. There's probably not that many people. Coach Kemphy walks up to me, is like, okay, what do we think, over under 15 people at our game? And it's just like, damn, bro, like we're not gonna play in front of anybody today. And then
you gotta make your own energy.
Yeah, exactly. And then the second little small story is we're done with shoot around, and we like each person on the team had a objective that they had to do to set up for the game, because like there wasn't enough staff for our game. So we had to like pull the bleachers out, put the chairs away, and put our bench chairs on the court. Like it's just only at D3. And then my freshman year story is, so I was like sixth man at the time, and we had a big roster. I think it was 22 to be exact my freshman year. And like I went in the game, I'm feeling good, like my legs are good, and then I get subbed out, and I'm high-fiving everyone down the bench, and I realize like, yo, there's not enough seats. So bro, I deadass had to sit on the ground for the next like however long I was subbed out, just watching the game. So I get back in the game and my legs are fried now. Like
they were cold.
They were cold, they were sore, because I was like just sitting down with my knees covered. And then I played shitty the rest of the game. And that's just like your D3 experience. Sit on the ground because your roster's too big and the school you're playing doesn't have enough seats for you. So that's our segment of only at D3 this week. If you like that, leave a like. If you like this episode, subscribe, follow our pod. And
thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.